and you want to push them out of that comfort zone just enough to have growth, because growth does not happen in a comfort zone.
DizRun's Radio, episode 436, starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to DizRun's Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, so as my week of vacation winds down, that means the week of best of episodes is also winding down. And today is the third and final best of episode from this week. If you missed the first two, talk to Nora Bird on Monday and talk to Susie Lemmer on Wednesday, and would definitely, talk to them. Over a year and a half ago, but re-aired our conversations on Monday and Wednesday. And, they obviously things have changed in a year and a half, but there's a lot of good insights and wisdom and stories that certainly hold up. So I would encourage you to go check those out if you haven't already. And I know here in the States, it's a holiday week, so, your routine may be out a little bit, but definitely would encourage you to check those out. Even if you listened to them when they first came out a year or plus ago, a year and a half ago for both of those two. And today, taking the third trip down memory lane with the last member of our Running Coaches Mastermind group, Ms. Laura Norris. This episode was originally episode 251, so still a pretty good while back, and it originally aired in May of 2015. But this is another good episode, lots of good coaching tips, and especially some nutrition and fueling type of suggestions and tips as well. So we'd certainly encourage you to enjoy this one, take some notes, and if you want some more information, definitely head over to Laura's website, thisrunnersrecipes.com. Lots of good coaching tips and, again, fueling and nutrition tips there as well. So without any further ado, enjoy this little trip down memory lane with my friend, Laura. Hey, guys. My guest for today's show is someone that has a great website focused on two of the things that many of us probably hold dear, running and food. Her journey to blog stardom wasn't the initial plan, but as most of us have probably experienced in life, many paths end up leading us into places that we didn't originally intend to go. And for the lucky ones among us, the place that we end up is the exact place that we were meant to be to begin with. And that is pretty much the case with today's guest. So without any further ado, it is my pleasure to be able to welcome runner, foodie, and coach Laura Norris to the show. Laura, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for the kind introduction.
Very, very well deserved. And guys, if you want to check out Laura's blog and website, I undersold it in the intro, promise you that. So head over to thisrunnersrecipes.com. And if you want to connect with her on social media, basically pretty self-explanatory, but there is a couple little variations here. So Instagram and Facebook, it's the same handle. It's thisrunnersrecipes, all kind of one word. Of course, on Instagram, all one word. And then on Twitter and Pinterest, especially on the Twitter, to try to save a couple of characters, it's just thisrunrecipes. But I'll have the links to all of that, all of her social media stuff, her website, anything else that we happen to talk about today as well at the show notes for today's episode, which you'll be able to find at disruns.com/251. So Laura, the way we always get things started on the show, you listen to the show, so you know what question's coming. And that's just to ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
Like many people who have been on here, I love the half marathon. I love training for the half. I love racing the half. I love that feeling after a really good half marathon where you feel like you worked hard, but you can actually go out and grab a beer and you don't feel like you're going to collapse. And as a coach, I work a lot with half marathon athletes. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons I love the race is because it's so approachable and accessible. Nowadays, a lot of us, including myself, tend to take on a lot in our lives. Mm-hmm. We have jobs, we have side jobs sometimes, family, volunteer work, all that. And the half marathon can fit into that. And then finally, I love that pace where it's hard, but it's not all out. Like marathon pace just feels too comfortable for too long for me. And I like to push myself, but not, push myself to like 5K feeling like I'm going to throw up. So.
Right. So it's kind of that happy middle ground of all aspects of effort, of distance, of time, of training, kind of a nice middle area.
Yes, it is. And I'm a huge fan of the happy medium. So,
well, you know, what's the saying in everything in life, moderation. So you got moderation of distance, moderation of effort, and, you know, it fits.
Mm-hmm, very much so.
So what's your running history like? I know you've done not too far back in history, right? You've done a marathon, but you've done mostly, like you said, your favorite is a half marathon. Where did you get started? You know, high school, middle school, things like that, or has it been something a little bit later in college or after that? What's your running history kind of look like?
I started running in college. Right when I started college, you know, I went to a small school where we had a chapel break, and it was in the middle of the class day, and everything was closed except for, I think, the cafeteria, the gym, and of course the chapel. And during that time, I would go take a break from my classes and run just like for 30 minutes. And that quickly became a habit. And as many of us know, habit quickly turns into passion. So I continued running all throughout college, and by my senior year, I really got into it and was probably running up to like 8 miles a day. I was bored, but I was also stressed because, you know, college is weird like that. And in grad school, I really fell in love with running. It became my release from the stress of graduate school. And it also became, in a way, sort of my claim to being in control when I felt as if I was not in control of many aspects of school and academia. So especially when I was applying for PhD programs and had no idea if I even wanted to actually get a PhD, I ran a lot because I had control over it. Right. And it was a mental and physical release. Like after sitting at a desk all day, knee deep in like textbooks with languages that are written in all sorts of every direction, running was just so simple.
Right. Were you racing, or was it really just a stress relief? Just, I mean, like you said, just a chance to be in control and do something that you kind of turn the brain off and that type of thing.
For college and graduate school, it was just stress relief. I ran my first race, which was a 10K, in my final semester of graduate school when I was writing my master's thesis. I had more time on my hands, and I was like, okay, I'm going to just start small and train for a 10K and, you know, train loosely back then, because I think I followed just like a Hal Higdon plan or something. Yeah, so that was my first race. And as soon as I finished that, I was like, okay, once I'm done with school, I'm going to start doing longer races, because that was fun. And I feel like in a race, I don't feel warmed up to 5 miles in. So in the 10K, like once I really start going, then, oh, it was over. And so I did my first half marathon about 6 months later, in November of 2014. And since then, I have done two more half marathons and a full marathon.
Gotcha. So mentioned that the 10K was towards the end of master's degree. Did you end up going towards the PhD route? Or I kind of know the answer, but for those that don't, what kind of happened there?
I kind of did one of those things where you're just like, oh, if it's going to work out, it will work out. So in the world of academia, pretty much you have to go to these very top schools if you want an actual job. So I applied to Notre Dame and University of Chicago, which were the top schools in my field in the area where I was living. And I was just like, if I get into them, I get in and I do this. If not, well, then I, you know, find another career. I have all these, you know, skills in writing and research, and something will happen. And, you know, I didn't get into Notre Dame or University of Chicago. Wasn't honestly surprised, because, like, you know, thousands of people apply and like two get in. And so from there, I was, you know, I applied for jobs, but I have a very independent self-starter personality. And so I was like, ultimately, I never really did want to work for someone, which was why academia drew me, was because as a professor, you do have some sort of freedom. So I was like, I'll just start a running blog that I eventually will turn into as a front for a coaching business. I taught Pilates in college and I loved that. And all throughout graduate school, my backup idea was to work in fitness. I was like, if master's doesn't work out, I'll become a group fitness instructor. And then by the time I was I'm done with my master's and more in love with running. I was like, okay, if PhD doesn't work out, I'll get my running coach certification. And that's what brought me to where I am. And I am so grateful and happy that that is the course in which the past few years took.
Gotcha. Gotcha. What was your area of study throughout, you know, your years of schooling?
So it was history and philosophy kind of mingled into two. So I studied a lot of medieval history and then a lot of classical to medieval philosophy. So, you know, my now husband, then boyfriend, used to joke that he never had to worry about me in grad school because the only guys I talked about were centuries dead. you know, Aristotle, Augustine, Aquinas. That was my life.
Wow. So not exactly in the health fitnessy type of niche, but it was just another kind of side passion, side thing that, you know, had possibility. And obviously that's kind of where the route has taken you.
Yeah. And like, I do find that incredibly enough, you know, all that Aristotle and stuff that I read influences how I approach running and training clients. You know, Aristotle's really big on, as I almost talked about in the beginning, this sort of happy medium, that the happy life is found in the middle between, you know, deficiency and excess. So, you know, Aristotle's example are like, with generosity, you can be so much as a too generous person where you're giving everything away. You can also be stingy, and that's the deficiency. So in the middle is where you find that sort of individualized balance. And it applies to running, I very firmly believe. When working with an athlete, there is always what's too little for them. But then, you know, there's always a point of running too much and overtraining and getting injured. And so I feel like I have that sort of mindset, and all those years of working with that philosophy sort of shapes how I approach running and athletes. I do tend to very much be a person who is about moderation and being in the middle and finding where that middle is for each individual runner, because it's different and it changes as they grow. And I love to work with them to find that.
Yeah. I was going to say that middle has to be a moving target, especially in the running. But I mean, I would imagine just about anything where, you know, as we as humans or we as runners kind of evolve and grow and, you know, have setbacks or whatever the case may be, you're constantly reassessing the middle. Is that a struggle with some of the folks that you work with, or with for you as a coach?
So far it has not been a struggle. I mean, when you get a new client, it sort of is, because they're often in a comfort zone and you want to push them out of that comfort zone just enough to have growth, because growth does not happen in a comfort zone. But you also don't want to push them to the excess, to the, you know, extreme that will cause injury in that. But I find usually after seeing how they go for a few weeks, I often have them send me like what their past few months of training have looked like. And I kind of dig through that and see where that happy medium is for them and consider their goals and push them just a little bit, but keep it all balanced. And it is a challenge, but that's the fun of being a coach, is that it is challenging and it's different with every runner. There's no cookie cutter runner out there. There's no cookie cutter plan, as I like to say. And that's why we're all so drawn to it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It sounds almost a little bit too, you say, you know, get a couple of months worth or however much worth of, you know, their recent history and their data and what they've been doing. Sounds like maybe some of that research from schooling is still a big part of what you're doing and looking back through and really analyzing where they've been to help them to get to where they want to go.
It is. And to go back to like what I learned a lot in school with Aristotle, it's not just that there's a happy medium, it's that there's this sort of telos, this end, which we're all striving for. And, you know, speaking short term, often for athletes, it's a goal race. And so you look at what will guide them towards that end. But then overall, running changes you. Those miles transform you. And each runner is on a journey to find their better self out there on the road. And as a coach, you're not only bringing them to that like one end, that race and, you know, their next race, but to the greater goal of, you know, finding who they are.
Is that something, and maybe from the Aristotle days, but is that something that is often defined beforehand, or is that something that you almost don't know until you get there?
I think it's almost you don't know till you get there, which is why self-awareness is so important, both in life and in running. I do emphasize with my athletes sort of an intuitive, self-aware approach that, you know, paces can change, and but effort doesn't lie. And so, like, as you progress, you'll notice this pace will feel easier, and, you know, a new pace will fill in at this other effort. And then it's always this growing process, and just to trust the process and see where it takes you. I think a lot of times runners, including myself, have these self-imposed limitations that, oh no, I can't BQ, I'm not that fast, or whatever.
Well, shoot, I mean, I just say that goes back even to like the 4-minute mile. Like once Roger Bannister did it, then all of a sudden, like, it got crushed, and everybody was running. I mean, you know, proverbially, everybody was running a 4-minute mile at that point, even though, you know, weeks before, months before, like, nobody thought it was possible.
Exactly. Yes. And then, you know, someday that'll be the 2-hour marathon. Oh, or
that's crazy talk.
Yeah, I know. I'd be thrilled just to finish a marathon in like 3.5 hours. 2 hours boggles my mind.
Yeah. And I don't know. It's one of those things where on the one hand, it's a matter of time, but on the other hand, like, there has to be at some point there has to be a limit to where it's just not possible anymore. I don't know what the limit might be, but at some point there has to be.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, I think I read somewhere, probably in like Runner's World or Running Times, that like, then people, once like a certain goal, like record's been broken or certain times been set, people shift focus. So right now the marathon is huge and people are like watching as that sub 2-hour marathon happens, but the mile record, to the best of my knowledge, hasn't been changed in years. It's like, sometimes I feel like it stops when people shift their focus. I don't know, but there is a point where you can't run like an hour marathon.
Right. Right. And I remember as a kid, I was watching some show on PBS, and this is a complete tangent, but it does fit, 'cause they were talking about running. It was talking about how, you know, things will always continue to improve and continue to improve. And they were talking about the 4-minute mile, and they showed like a graph of how over the 100 years or the 50 years or whatever it was before Roger Bannister broke 4 hours, that it was pretty, you know, pretty steady progression towards that line. And so the argument was, well, that trend's just going to keep continuing. And then it was like, no, because if you extended it out, eventually people would be running a race in negative time, you know, continue to follow the graph. Like, it's just not possible. So, a little bit tangential, but it's just one of those things, like, you know, we always think that, or, you know, there's always that idea that anything's possible, but at some point, somebody will run the fastest marathon, whatever it ends up being, and it'll stand, you know. And it's kind of a little bit of mind blowing to think about that, but it's you know, it is what it is.
Oh yeah, it is very much mind boggling to think that at some point, like, people will just not even be able to improve by like a second, or that it'll be like Paula Radcliffe, where someone will touch that, or, you know, someone will hit that record, and then no one will touch it for how many years has that been standing? 13.
Yeah. And nobody's been close.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, it's, and especially with the longer distance stuff, and obviously, you know, this as a coach and as somebody who runs as well, like, there's so many things that have to go right. And especially at that level, like, you know, for you and I, there's so many things that have to go right to run a PR, but, you know, when it comes to the world record type of a level, like, oh my gosh, like the weather, the nutrition, the fueling, the other runners that are pushing you, like, there's so many variables that to just think that, oh, you know, oh yeah, any old day, any world record can fall, like, yeah, but not really.
Yeah. And yeah, I swear also, it just seems like at the big races like Chicago and stuff, where records are usually set each year, it just gets hotter and hotter. And it's like, how are they going to keep setting records if every year it's like 9 million degrees at the finish or whatever?
Yeah, it's crazy. But I mean, you know, and as we're recording this, Boston was yesterday, and it was just, I mean, even that race, like, I can't remember the woman's name, but the woman that came from out of nowhere to win, I mean, just incredible what the elites of our sport can do. And you know, to be able to watch those races now, which, I mean, 10 years ago, like, those races weren't on TV. You couldn't watch Boston. You couldn't watch, you know, New York and LA and all this stuff. And it's a lot of fun and I don't know, maybe I'd love to get your opinion on too, of even though it's something that, you know, I'll never be able to run what those guys ran yesterday, even shoot what the women ran yesterday. Like, it's not in the cards for me, but it's still inspiring to watch it and see what the true greats can do.
Oh, I agree so much. I love watching races on TV. I was actually super bummed yesterday because living on the West Coast, sort of times get jumbled in my mind. And I was like, oh, the Boston Marathon's at 10. Well, out here, that's like 7 a.m. So I like got back from my run and it was, the elite part was over.
Oh, no.
I love watching those. They're so inspiring. And it is just amazing to see people, you know, run these times that are nearly impossible for the rest of us. And then they just like cross the finish line and, you know, look fresh as a daisy, no big deal.
Or the first, you know, 10 miles or so when they're knocking off, you know, paces faster than I can run 1 mile all out and be literally, you know, drop as soon as I get to the end of that mile. And they're just, you know, it's a casual pace for them. It's something that I don't know if you've seen this yet, but I've had folks that either I worked with or just friends that are, you know, in town that I run with. And it's just like, sometimes that conversation of like, well, you know, how is my, you know, talking about like efforts and things like that. Well, I'm running hard, but you know, somebody else like these elites, like their easy pace is, you know, 8 minutes. And like, I can't even handle that. Like, how, like it's just, it, sometimes it can be a mind bender a little bit to think that like, it's all relative. Like their hard pace might be sub 5 minutes. But their easy pace might only be 7 minutes, but you know, it's something that I've, it sounds simple in my mind, but it's hard to sometimes explain and get that across to folks that like, what one person's easy is one person's hard, and that's okay. And then we all just, you know, kind of keep growing and improving from there.
Oh, definitely. And yeah, they do. They make it look so easy, but then it's always like, I feel like when I see other runners out there, I'm like, oh, they make it look so easy also. And you never look at another runner and you're like, oh, you're running a 9 minute mile, you're slow. You look at another runner and regardless of their, you know, whatever pace they're at, you're like, yeah.
Right. To kind of go back a little bit to the career shift and making the change from academia to run coach and whatnot. Did you experience any, I don't know if pushback is the right word, but what were your like kind of friends and family reactions? I'm assuming that they kind of knew that the plan was to kind of go into the PhD type of thing. That was the route that you had been going down. What was their hesitation? Was there pushback? Was there support? How did that play out?
Well, my family and my husband were incredibly supportive as they always are. Like, and you know, we had all been kind of nervous hearing those reports of academia, how there just aren't jobs out there. And, you know, you'll spend forever in school to then work part-time as an adjunct. And my husband was actually like super excited because we have these dreams of owning our own businesses someday so we can just travel the world. We both of us have a severe case of wanderlust. And so when I decided to do the running coach thing, it began to open up those opportunities for us to, you know, look more into working both for ourselves and, you know, then create that sort of lifestyle that we want. And, yeah, so family was supportive. Friends, it was a little weird. Like I still sometimes get people ask like, oh, are you in a PhD program? And you're like, no, I work for myself now as a running coach and freelance writer. And they're like, oh, are you going to go into a PhD program? And you're like, no. And, but I think when my husband and I moved 2,000 miles across the country to live where we wanted to live and, you know, but away from all those big research schools, it was very like clear that it's like, no, we're, you know, I'm not going back to school. He's not going back to school. We're pursuing different routes in life. But yeah, there is pushback, especially because a lot of my friends, both from college and graduate school, did go on to academia. And it's a different world. And I don't know, I think there's always, people are surprised when you take big risks in life, like just being like, I'm going to work for myself. And people are like, uh-huh, sure you are. Cute.
has I know you said earlier that they kind of doing your own thing or kind of being independent was something that has appealed to you. And then with that in mind, you know, again, like you said, you're going to go to academia, so you can still have some level of independence, but, you know, kind of, you know, still doing your own thing, but not necessarily doing your own thing. It was kind of, again, a kind of happy medium. Funny how that continues to be the trend so far. But has entrepreneurship or that type of thing, was that something that you had been exposed to early in life? Or was that something that you kind of fell into? Or that desire. Because I know, I mean, you know, as a kid, like, I mean, shoot, I'm the son of an entrepreneur, and yet that was something that was never even talked about. Like the idea of starting your own business was never something that I was exposed to until after I was done with school and into the workforce and not happy. And like, what could I do to do my own, you know, to be happier? And it was kind of do my own thing. Where do you kind of fit into that scale?
Yeah, entrepreneurship was definitely a new concept for me. Like, I've always been a sort of self-starter, and I was probably one of those kids who was like, I'm going to make jewelry and sell it when I was like five. But, you know, most children are like that. I am from a family of engineers, and by family, I mean my mom, my dad, grandfathers on both sides, uncles on both sides. You know, pretty much it was like I could have gotten into U of I at the drop of a hat to study engineering. So, you know, that was kind of the life path that I saw around me, like, which, you know, as an engineer, you can get your PE and, you know, work for yourself, but it's very different than entrepreneurship. And at the start of launching my coaching business and my blog, it was a huge learning curve for me. It still is a huge learning curve for me. Business does not come naturally to me. Like, I have the discipline and the motivation and the desire to work for myself. But then when you actually, as you know, actually dig into entrepreneurship, and there's marketing and budgeting and all these things, then I'm just like, whoa, whole new world.
Yeah. It's there's so much, and there's so much you don't know that sometimes that can be a blessing and a curse, because sometimes, you know, not knowing what you don't know is saves you a little bit. And sometimes, man, you know, there's so many, some good and some a little bit sleazy, but there's so many options for learn how to do this and find how to do this. And, you know, just all of those things and trying to figure out which ones you really need to invest in, or which ones you can get by without, or which ones have good free options. It can be overwhelming, to say the least.
Oh yeah, very much. I have found though that being a runner, especially a distance runner, is a lesson in itself sort of to entrepreneurship, because running teaches you that you just got to grit your teeth and work hard, and that success comes with that hard work, perseverance, and consistency. And I think nowadays also it's like that stuff isn't always just taught in life, and running is one of life's greatest teachers. So I think in part, like, being able to persevere, especially through those first years or so of working for yourself that are discouraging at times, that, you know, what running has taught me and what running teaches many pushes through and makes it easier.
Yeah. No, definitely. Completely agree. I've said before, you probably heard me say it, that I'm not a big metaphor guy, but man, if there's one metaphor for life that, you know, that I continue to glean principles from, or, you know, continue to glean examples from, it's running. Just everything, everything you said, the struggle, the good times, the times that it feels easy, the times that, you know, what felt easy yesterday all of a sudden is just a drag, and like, oh my gosh, I can't believe how difficult this is. It's ups and downs and goods and bads. And, I mean, just running in life, like, they are two peas in a pod for sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. And I find that true in running beyond, like, I mean, any other sport, really. I know, like, cycling can have it, but especially, like, there's something about individual sports and teaching those lessons.
Definitely. When you were getting ready to start the blog and kind of, you know, start that new phase of your life, what was the impetus to bring the food side into it? What was, you know, with this runner's recipes, kind of almost sounds, you know, like it's as much food as it is running. Has food always been a passion, or how did that that part of the equation work out?
When I started the blog, I did intend to have more of a focus on recipes and food than it's sort of grown into. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that, you know, especially stuff with blogging, it grows as you grow and it changes as you and your business change. But yeah, besides running, cooking was sort of my other like hobby and outlet in college and graduate school. I would just make up random recipes and try to like cook them and see how they turned out. And so I love to cook, and it's always been a passion, but I found as soon as I got into the blogging world that food blogging is its own confusing, overwhelming thing. And there's so much that goes into it that sort of as the blog has evolved and as I've grown this tribe and audience and sort of looked into what they want to receive, like, I still do recipes, but it's been pushed to the side because even usually when I talk about food, even it's more conversational or nutrition type stuff than like a recipe. Like, I think I'm right now good if I do like a recipe like twice a month. So, but still it does play a role. I recently adapted or returned to a more sustainable sort of vegetarian before six, if you will, diet. For various reasons. And I wrote about that a lot on the blog, and there was a lot of interest from my readers about how to put together distance running with a lower meat or meatless diet.
Let's go into that a little bit. What are some tips if people are interested in that type of, making that type of dietary change?
I firmly believe that you want to go for a similar taste and texture in food. So, as my husband and I have started eating less meat, we've been eating more stuff like mushrooms and eggplants and lentils and stuff that still has that meaty flavor and that meaty chew, because with like, if you enjoy meat, which I do, but you're looking to eat less of it, eating something that doesn't taste meaty at all won't give you any satisfaction. And like, I'm not one for restriction. I want to enjoy my food as much as I want it to like fuel my running. And so I firmly believe that. Also spices. There are so many new worlds of possibility when you just experiment with different spices and different cuisines. So as we've eaten less meat, we've gone more into Indian food and Greek food, Mediterranean, and making those at home. And it's intimidating at first. And I think especially for like a lot of us runners do tend to be creatures of habit. I know I am. So I think just breaking out of that habit of it and trying new things. And then another thing I always tell people when they ask me about it is don't try like lentils or, you know, some plant protein based meal the day before your long run. It just might not turn out well.
Right. Break into it gradually.
Exactly. But yeah, I probably now eat meat like 5 times a week, always at dinner. And my running has felt really, really good. You know, I think a part of it is like when you eat meatless, you are getting more carbohydrates, especially those nice complex ones. But then, you know, it's like Scott Jurek and all those ultra runners who don't eat any meat at all. Like they still manage to do it and do it well. Right. So there's gotta be something there.
Yeah, definitely. It's, you know, it's one of those things that can be tough. I mean, I've you know, always been a meat and potatoes kind of guy, you know, just growing up. I mean, that was what we ate. So it was, you know, all that I knew. And I've dabbled with going, you know, meatless here and there. And sometimes I don't know if I've ever done it long enough to see an effect, but you feel like you've definitely seen an impact with your running since you've not gone completely meatless, but definitely cut back.
Yeah, very much so. I feel like I have more energy. And then when I do eat meat, I feel like it's just this like kick of protein that really is good for recovering after a hard effort. I could never cut out meat completely. After a race, I always want a burger. But yeah, I feel like it has helped, if anything, that it's just getting more and more plants into my body. But at the same time, like some nights I just want like a chicken breast and a baked potato. Mm-hmm. So I eat that. Yeah, it's balance, but I do think there are benefits.
Well, and you know, like you said, if that's what your body seems to be craving or seems to be telling you that you want, like, you know, don't go with the restriction of, oh my gosh, I can't do this. Like you indulge and you have it and you feel okay. And then you get back on to the quote unquote, you know, schedule the next day or, you know, and if it's for you, if it's at dinner time, like that's still part of the schedule. So it's all good.
Yeah, it's all good. And I definitely think listening to the body and like, cause every, you know, just like every runner is better at a certain distance than another, like people's metabolisms are different. Some people respond better to a high meat diet than others, and I would never want to tell anyone to ignore their body signals and do something that doesn't work for them. Like that's just not my philosophy in life.
Gotcha. You mentioned spices. What are a handful of spices that maybe you hadn't used before, but now that you've tried them, like they are you know, things you can't almost live without?
Yeah, so smoked paprika and like Hungarian paprika are amazing. They make everything taste like summer barbecue. And I am probably a little too much addicted to smoked paprika right now. It tastes amazing, especially on like sweet potatoes and stuff. Garam masala, or however you say it, that one Indian spice is amazing. I love it, especially if I'm making like a lentil or bean-based curry. And fenugreek is really cool. Also, that's another one I use in a lot of curries. For, you know, beyond that, I am pretty actually boring. Then it's like garlic, salt, and pepper. But I know that some runners love, like, or some people in general love, like, tarragon for making fish taste better. Mm-hmm. So it's just go and I like to go to, like, the bulk section of the local organic market here and just pick out a new spice to try. And usually it does end up being a curry one.
It's just, I just know for myself that it can seem almost overwhelming. It's like, you know, you said the salt, pepper, garlic, you know, those handful, a couple of things that, you know, they pretty much work with just about anything and you know, kind of know are, you're familiar with them and know how to use them. But then, you know, you look at the spice rack at the grocery store or at the market or wherever you might be, it's just like, there's so many things. And like, you know, on the one hand, you'd love to try them all. But on the other hand, like there goes your whole grocery budget for the week or for the month sometimes, if you want to get every type of spice that's available. So at least that gives a couple of ideas of things to maybe try. And, you haven't tried them before, pick up a couple of these suggestions and, you know, experiment and see what works for you.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And like, I mean, you also hear that the spices are really great, like anti-inflammatory, which is good for running because, you know, anything you can do to help recovery
is a good thing.
Yeah. It's a very good thing.
So what are some, food things or maybe, not specific so much, but maybe rules of thumb or things like that, that from your experience or your opinion or whatever, that maybe runners tend to do wrong. I'm thinking things like maybe, you know, what's your take on like the pre-race pasta carb loading thing or in-race nutrition, things like that, that, again, not that you're telling everybody that what they're doing is wrong, but that you're just not maybe a big fan of.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the pre-race pasta dinners, in all honesty. It's I definitely believe in carbo loading, like eating a higher percentage of carbohydrates. And maybe if you're running a marathon, like just upping your calorie intake overall. But I'd almost encourage people to spread those carbs more out throughout that day before the race, especially at breakfast and lunch. Mm-hmm. So your body has time to digest them. I feel like a big pasta dinner would just leave me, and I've heard many runners say this, feeling heavy at the start of the race, which is not a pleasant sensation. And not to mention that, you know, then there's the like GI distress.
Yeah, what goes in has to come out.
Exactly. So like before a race, I actually love fish, a baked potato, and like a small serving of wild rice. Like it's a lot of carbs, but it's not heavy like pasta. Yeah. And then with mid-race fueling, that's actually a funny one because sometimes I look at some athletes and, you know, overfueling is a definite problem, but then a lot of people don't actually fuel enough. I heard somewhere, I think it was from Stephanie Howe, who's an ultra runner and a like PhD in nutrition, that eating more frequently during a marathon actually prevents like GI distress because it keeps a steady blood flow to your stomach. And so a lot of runners will like take only like, you know, 3 gels over the course of a 4-hour marathon and have problems with like hitting the wall or something later in the race. So I'm a fan of like 40, 45 minutes, take your gel, take your chew, eat half of a banana, whatever works for you. But then on top of that, so like race high, eat a lot of carbs during the race, but then I like the idea of training low. Not completely depleted, like, but training on slightly less carbs. You want to practice for the race, like have a run where you do your exact race fueling during that. But then I think it's good to teach your body to be, you know, efficient and maybe go do a 10-mile run without any fuel during that every once in a while.
So my strategy is most Saturday mornings when I do my long runs to just go with nothing but maybe 3 or 4 sips of coffee and go run might actually be beneficial to me on race day.
Yeah, exactly. It very much might be, because then on race day, you hit up those carbs. Mm-hmm. And as long as like, you know, that the product you're using works for you, it's like rocket fuel.
That's the strategy that I've been going with. And it's kind of what it seems like. I just feel like, you know, make it hard for yourself and give yourself that extra challenge during your training, especially the mental side of like, oh man, I haven't had anything to eat today. Like, you know, am I going to have enough fuel? But then on race day, you eat well and you fuel during the race, and it makes a big, maybe it's mental as much as it is anything else, but I feel like it's sort of helped me, but I'm glad to hear somebody else is on the same page as me on that.
Yeah. I did that for my past half marathon, and most of my long runs I do maybe like 1 gel over like 14 miles. And that's because I run before, like, I'd have a small snack and then run before breakfast. But on race day, I was like, I think I took 2 gels over the course of a half marathon, which seems like a lot, but like, I felt fantastic. So I think we're both onto something.
Yeah, definitely. And another thing is, I mean, you gotta kind of like everything else with the finding the middle and the constant movement of the middle, but you still have to just keep experimenting and keep trying and find what works for you, whether that's, training without eating or if that really doesn't work for you, then don't force yourself to do it. Have something small or adjust what time you train or what you eat the night before or whatever. But it's just a matter of finding what gives yourself your best chance for success.
Yeah, exactly. And it's different for every runner. That said, it always does surprise me when people are like, I ran a marathon on only water. I'm like, wow.
Oh, yeah.
I would be eating like everything in sight by like mile 20.
Yeah, I can do a half marathon or less without having too much. But for my pre-race marathon breakfast is like one of those things that most runners are like, no way. Cause it's like 3 or 4 eggs and a bunch of, home fries and grits and coffee. And just like, I mean, I have to get up a little bit extra early to give myself time to digest and food settle and that type of thing. But it's something that I've found that works for me. And I've tried to go on less food, and it just doesn't. It doesn't end well unless I start with a full gas tank and then continue to top it off around during the course of the race.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely think that's a good idea. Like, one of the mistakes I made in my first marathon was probably not eating enough before that race. And I think I had like a banana and a bowl of Chex cereal just because I was so like dry Chex cereal, which is gross anyway. but I was so jittery and I didn't sleep well the night before. And I put like a lot of pressure on myself to hit a certain time goal. And it just, there was a million and a half mistakes I made in my first marathon. And that was one of them.
Well, but you finished the first marathon, which means that it was a PR, which means it was a success. So, you learn from those mistakes. And now the next time that you do a full, try to improve on a few of those things.
Mm-hmm, very much. And as a coach also, I kind of believe in not intentionally making mistakes, but putting myself through that process over and over again and seeing what mistakes I make and using those to help my athletes. So I'm launching like this marathon training camp, like a virtual camp plus coaching plus webinars and fueling and hydration courses and all this to help runners with the marathon this summer. And I really believe that it's like the mistakes I have made are something that I can take and turn into lessons for other runners. Cause especially if they're a first time marathoner, they haven't made those mistakes themselves, nor do you necessarily want to see another runner make those mistakes if they can avoid them.
Well, yeah. And I feel like that's part of the reason that, that we do what we do is to help people to help prevent people from making those mistakes. I mean, if you're going to pay good money to work with a coach, one of the things I would hope that you're expecting to get out of it, and one of the things that I would hope that we as the coaches would deliver is, hey, this is a mistake that I've made. Maybe learn from my experience and don't do the same thing.
Yeah. Oh yeah, exactly.
So this camp, is it something that, is it still kind of in the planning phase or where are you at with putting that together?
I'm actually like launching it on the website tomorrow for like pre-registration. So funny enough, that comes out tomorrow being April 20th, because I know this will go out later. So probably by the time people are listening, it will be live for registration.
Definitely. Is there an easy link offhand, or can I just link to it in the show notes?
You can I'll have it on my website, where if you go to the homepage of This Runner's Recipes, it'll be at the top. But once I get the link live, I can send that to you to pop in the show notes.
Perfect. We'll do that for sure.
But yeah, so, and then it'll start, like, officially things will start on June 1st, because I feel like a lot of people start training around then, but I want to make it so if you're running the New York City Marathon and don't start training to mid-July, you can jump in at that time. But yeah, I want to have, like, a Facebook group to provide daily support for runners, and also where they can go in, share their victories, share their struggles, have people to relate to. I'll be sending weekly lesson emails to sort of, I feel the more you know about something, especially the marathon, the better you do, and the more you trust your training when you understand your training. I'll be doing monthly webinars covering in depth for a couple hours topics. There'll be a included 6-week fueling and hydration e-course that I also do separately, but I feel like that's vital for the marathon.
Certainly.
And then there'll be individualized coaching where, you know, especially at the marathon, you know, you can't just pull a plan offline and have good luck with it. So I want, you know, to really offer runners just the full package from, you know, community support to individualized training and everything in between.
Awesome. Awesome. That'll be exciting to see how that goes. Hopefully you get some interest in that for sure.
Hopefully, yeah. I've had a few people express interest, which is exciting because it's always a little nerve wracking to just put a new project out there.
Yes. Yes, it is. But you put it out there and you know, you adjust just like everything else, you know, that we've kind of talked about, where you start off going one way and sometimes it, you know, life happens and you go a little bit different. But, you know, as long as you figure out where you're going to ultimately end up, or, you know, maybe you don't figure it out till you get there, but you figure it out and you just keep going forward.
Exactly. I completely agree with that. And then my marathon, for some crazy reason, is in July. So by the time most people are amping up their training, I'll be like completely done with, you know, done with mine and able to just 100% focus on them. Not that they would get anything less while I am training, but I'm hoping that this training for a marathon in July will teach me even a bit more to help my athletes along the way.
Definitely. What race are you training for?
I'm doing the Jack and Jill Downhill Marathon in North Bend, Washington. It's like, it's in its second year of running and it's a tiny little one, but it's popular around here and sold out in November.
Oh, wow.
So for some reason, marathon season in Seattle is like during the summer. And it's weird. Most of the races are probably in like May through September, except for the big marathon.
Right. What's the weather like in Seattle? Like, I mean, is somebody from, you know, somebody in Central Florida right now, like, I feel like I would rather run a June, July marathon in Seattle than in Florida. But is it still going to be pretty hot?
By my standards, it would be hot, meaning it would be in the mid 70s at like the end of the day, but the race starts in the mountains. So it will probably be in like the 50s at the start of the race, realistically.
So it'd be a good start, but it'll get warmer as the day goes.
Yeah. And we're just hoping, like last summer was obscenely hot out here. And I say that as like, a Seattleite who's like, it's hot. It's 70 degrees. But last summer got to like 90 a few days, which for you in Florida is nothing. But
it's nothing. But, you know, it's still, if that's the day that you're running, 90 degrees is 90 degrees, you know, no matter where you are, it's not a lot of fun.
No, it's not. So, yeah. But out here, it's overall usually... it's pretty mild year round here. It just depends on, I think summer is for marathons because it's like the one time of year that it's not going to rain every day.
Gotcha. Well, you know, I guess that could be a perk too of, you know, a little bit more blue skies and mm-hmm. makes it a little bit more enjoyable, even if you're suffering for, you know, twice as long as what you would prefer to run your races in.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause running in the rain isn't fun. It's not.
Well, now see, I'll disagree with you there with the caveat that it needs to be warm. So when we have our summer rains down here and it's like still 75 or 80 degrees, like that is some of the best runs I've ever had have happened in like torrential downpours, but it's, you know, 75 or 80 degrees outside. But if it's 50 degrees or 40 degrees and it's raining, now that's a whole different ball of wax.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I agree that when I bet it in warm weather, it feels amazing. Like I don't hate it, but I don't like racing in the rain. And here it is. It's like, it'll be 40 degrees out and like just this constant drizzle. And it feels like, I feel like I ran in rain all the way from like November through March was just like every 5 out of, you know, 7 runs was in rain.
Right. Well, you know, the one thing you can't control and you have to train for, at least mentally be trained for, is different weather conditions. So mm-hmm. at least you got that going for you. If you ever show up for a race and the weather is just, you know, cold and wet, you've been there, done that.
Yeah, been there, done that. If anything, I run faster because I'm like, I want to be inside where it's dry.
Exactly. So, Laura, as we're getting kind of close to wrapping things up, what's the, you know, do you have any long-term future goals, whether it's, you know, bucket list races or, you know, anything like that, or business wise or anything like that to kind of wrap things up with today?
Yeah. Long-term goals. I would love to run a sub 130 half marathon. Mm. That's kind of been like my big time goal in my mind right now, which in Seattle, like still wouldn't place you in any of the races, even in age groups, but you know, so maybe from there I would try harder, but yeah, sub 130 half, which is 8 minutes off my PR.
Hmm.
Yeah, 8 minutes off my PR. So not huge, but hard.
Yeah, it's one of those where it's not huge, but then you start to do the math and like that's like 45 seconds a mile and I'm already killing myself to get to where I am now. Like it's not a lot, but it's a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Like those seconds matter in running. Business goals, I would just, you know, love to keep getting, you know, working with more runners and growing the business to where it is like a full-time job thing, which I know is tricky and I know is hard and it's always something that requires a lot of work, but that's just like my dream job right now. And, you know, then in terms of goal races, I could just race all the way up and down the West Coast and be happy. I know for a lot of runners, Boston is a huge goal. And, you know, if I BQ'd and it worked out well for like where my goals were that year and when the Boston Marathon fell, maybe I'd run it. But I mean, over here, there's BMO Vancouver and California International Marathon and the Portland one, which I did and loved and would run again. And just so many, like, it's a whole nother world of races out here. Right. And it's exciting.
One last thing, talk about going up and down the West Coast racing. Any desire or have you done any trail racing or is he mostly looking just to stay on the roads?
Yeah, I have not done trail racing yet, but it's going to happen. I feel it. I know it. Like right now where I live in Seattle, it's probably like in Seattle traffic, 45 minutes, an hour drive to get to good trails. So I don't run them often during the week, but I have my eye on a few trail races out here. I don't know if I would do an ultra, but like there are some trail half marathons that just look fantastic out here. Maybe even a trail marathon. I don't know. I like to be in the woods.
Right. Yeah. It was something we didn't even get into, but a whole bunch of hiking and things like that. So that would be, I could see that being right up your alley of being, you know, half marathon, marathon, whether you go to the ultra territory or not, like just getting in the woods and doing some terrain and some hiking while you're running could be, I could see that being something that you might be interested in.
Yeah. So it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, definitely. I kind of say the same thing. It's a matter of time till I venture into the trails and probably into short ultra territory. Not going to make a habit of it, I don't think, but I got a feeling that 50K is going to get me one of these days before too much longer.
Oh yeah. It just sounds like such a fun distance. Like it somehow sounds not as hard as a marathon, maybe because it's on that softer surface. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy, but it just sounds fun.
I think in the more I've talked to ultra runners, it's wrapping my head around the idea that like, yeah, it's a race, but like it's less of a race and more of a party. And you know, you're not really worried about your time as much. Like that's where I think I could be talked into it of like not worrying about having to run the whole thing, like hike up the hill, hike up the mountain, like whatever. That's cool. Like, you know, if it's a water crossing, stop and just like sit down in the water and cool down a little bit. Like, now maybe, you know, some of those type of things are starting to perk my interest a little bit, but don't tell anybody. Cause I got enough people that are pushing me towards it that I don't need them to find out we had this part of the conversation.
Yeah, I won't tell.
All right. Appreciate it. So, guys, again, thisrunnersrecipes.com, links in the show notes for all the social media, things that we talked about today. We'll have link to the running camp, if that's something that you might be interested in as well. Everything can be found at disruns.com/251. So, Laura, thanks for taking the time today. And, obviously all the best to you going forward and, look forward to staying in touch and seeing how things, develop for you in the future.
Thank you so much. And best to you in running and everything. And we'll be in touch.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode with Laura and myself. A little blast from the past type of episode. And I hope that you took something from it. I know I did. And not surprisingly, it was a different takeaway this time than it was the first time that I chatted with Laura. So we would look forward to hearing what your takeaway from this episode was. And again, it doesn't matter whether this was your first time listening to the show or, you know, you listened to this as a best of, you were here when the original episode aired. You know, the takeaways may change, or maybe, you know, you forget something and this rekindles that. So would certainly love to hear what it was for you that stood out from this episode. For me, you know, Laura said something that, kind of almost was in passing, but it stood out, and it stood out to me much more this time, and I'll explain why in just a second. But she said that paces can change, but effort doesn't lie when talking about training for a race or for anything. And you know, this time of year, as we are, you know, as this is best of is being released in the beginning of July, at least here in the Northern Hemisphere, here in the United States, it is hot, it is humid. And it can be downright miserable to get your runs in, you know, this time of year. And I think, I know both with myself and especially with my clients, it's easy to get caught up in the pace. It's easy to get caught up in looking at your watch and saying, my gosh, like I feel like I'm, you know, almost running myself ragged. I'm running at maximum effort and my pace is way, way off of my PR type of pace. Things are way slower than they should be. What is going on? And you know, there's physiological reasons for that when it comes to trying to keep your body cool and things of that nature. But it just speaks to the idea that effort is as important or more important to measure and to use as your guide than your pace is. Your pace can definitely change. There will be times that you're running, feels like you're running really, really fast and you look down at your watch and it's nice and slow, but the pace is, or the effort level, the heart rate is right where you want it to be, and vice versa. Times when you feel like you're barely walking and you look down at your watch and like, my gosh, I'm flying right now. So it's just important to run by effort all the time, but especially here in the heat and the humidity of the summer months, because, you know, I talk all the time about keeping your easy runs easy. And if you're working too hard when you're doing those easy runs to try to maintain a pace that for the weather conditions right now just isn't feasible, you're losing some of those benefits of the easy runs. So it's funny how something that stood out a little bit the first time we had this chat really stands out now. And then again, paces can change, but your effort doesn't lie. Make sure you're judging your runs based on your effort as much or more than you are judging them by what the watch says is in terms of your pace. So great bit of insight from Laura and very, I think, timely for this time of year when it is as hot and as humid as it's going to be in most places. So definitely keep an eye on your effort as much as you are with your pace. So that was my takeaway. Would love to hear yours. Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRun. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. And of course, you can head over to the show notes for this episode, which you can find at DizRuns.com/436, and leave a comment with your feedback and takeaway there. And you can also head to the original episode, which is DizRuns.com/251. And there may be a few other comments there that you can add to, and maybe glean some other things from some other folks as well. So with that, thank you for taking this week-long trip down memory lane with me. I hope that you enjoyed looking back on some of these episodes. It's a shame that, you know, obviously I can't run a best of episode all the time because that would just kind of defeat the purpose of, you know, and it would kind of suck for me because I really enjoy having all these conversations. But obviously, you know, you guys enjoy tuning in and getting some different insights and talking to different, or you're hearing the conversations I have with different folks on a regular basis. So we can't always be doing best of episodes, but there are so many great episodes in the archives. And it's just fun for me to be able to go back through and pull some out once in a while. And you know, the week that I'm on vacation is a good week to do that. You know, it just makes it easier to schedule some stuff beforehand, get everything lined up and ready to go so that I can be on vacation, not think about it. And then when I get back, we can hit the ground running with new things again. And that's exactly what we're doing starting next week. So thank you for humoring me. Hope that you enjoyed it. Let me know your thoughts on best of episodes. I would be curious to hear those as well. Again, you know the place to connect with me, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, email, carrier pigeon, smoke signal, whatever works best for you. Would love to hear your thoughts. And until next time and until next week when we're back to regular, thank you for listening. Hope you have a good one and we'll talk to you soon. Take care, guys. Mm-hmm.